Not a Disney Movie is an exploration of animated movies not made by Disney. It contains explicit language.
Welcome to Not a Disney Movie. I'm Paul.
I'm Natalie.
And today we're going to talk about Prince of Egypt.
This was Paul's choice. It's a weird choice for our first film, actually, to because it is biblical.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Can I just read off some of my blurb stuff then? Because I think like this is interesting.
Okay. Tell me about the movie.
So, Prince of Egypt came out in December 1998. So this is
it's old as shit.
It's old as shit now, yeah. I think, for one, like, it still looks really good.
I was really surprised when you told me how old it was.
Yeah, and, like, I was reading up on the, you know, it uses a lot of, I don't know how much you noticed necessarily, but, like, watching it, it's very, like, computer-enhanced.
Yeah.
But not in a way that's, like, disruptive. Like, it's, like, there's little things where you think, like, oh, that's, like, a 2D element, and then, like, doors open. It's like, oh, those door handles are, like, 3D. So, The Prince of Egypt.
Yes.
Was released in December 1998. It's a DreamWorks production. It was their second movie that was published or distributed by DreamWorks. The first came out in the same year. Know what that is?
Nope.
Ants.
Oh.
This came out the same year as Ants.
That is so weird.
Which is obviously like a fully CG movie, right?
And also... Yeah, no, that's mad.
So DreamWorks was founded in 1994 with, and this is just like a bit of a history lesson, with Jeffrey Katzenberg. And Katzenberg used to work at Disney. And apparently he'd always tried to get like a Ten Commandments movie made, but like that had never worked out.
I can't imagine.
No, and so just again, this is just a bit more context, but I don't think you necessarily, we can get into this like in later episodes, I think, but because it's quite important to know to some degree of like what happened to Disney during like the, you know, the early 90s sort of like Disney Renaissance era. And basically you had Jeffrey Katzenberg and Michael Eisner came in and like did a whole lot of stuff, some of it which worked, some of which would drove Disney into the ground to some degree. And they at some point, I guess, had like a falling out. So Katzenberg left and then started his own company with Spielberg and some other guy who I forget. And that was DreamWorks.
Right.
So apparently Katzenberg had like tried to get like this Ten Commandments movie going at Disney and it never taken off. And then when they'd had like a meeting with like, I guess, him and Spielberg and Geffen, Spielberg apparently said like, oh, you ought to do the Ten Commandments. And so this movie had been in production for 4 years. So this was like their first movie. This is the first DreamWorks movie that got made and released.
I thought you said it was the second one.
No, wow. So Ants was distributed by DreamWorks. It wasn't actually made by DreamWorks. It was made by another company.
Oh, snap.
So there's a few things like that. So they both came out under like the DreamWorks. Oh. And overall, this movie was the third highest grossing animated movie of that year. The first two being A Bug's Life and Mulan. So Disney's still very much on top, but it's interesting to note that like this movie.
But number one was A Bug's Life.
Number one was A Bug's Life. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are the facts. Now tell me about your feelings and emotions.
So number one, I think like this movie still holds up really well. Like I think it is like a good movie. Like just putting aside like all the. Like, obviously, it's a very religious story stuff. And, like, I think because you'd never seen the movie.
No.
And I had, like, vague memories of it. Like, I knew the movie and I knew, like, it was good from what I remembered. And I vaguely know, like, the Exodus story. But I know that mostly from an episode of Rugrats. which I think may have been a two-parter, but still. So I knew, like, the Moses story pretty well. Like, it's one that just, I think, like, kind of seems to stick out from school or whatever.
Well, I got really excited because I thought I'd remembered that Moses' biological mother was called Miriam. And I prodded you.
Yeah.
She's called Miriam. I remember that from school. And it's not. It's a sister, it's Miriam.
Yeah,
and
so you got that totally wrong.
Yeah. Just, I haven't retained any, like, anything from primary school that was about the Bible. That was really the only time in my life that we like and I don't know why we were studying Bible stories.
You always do. Did you not go to a CV school?
No, of course I didn't. I'm Scottish. Really,
I don't know how it works.
Well, it doesn't work like that. I find it really weird that you did go to a CV school.
It's because they're all CFA.
I wouldn't send my children to a CFA school.
You don't have much choice in England, but they're all CFA.
Well, that's why I'm not having any children here. Okay. Well, I'll still be English if I have them here. So. But the point is that... What is the point?
I don't know. You didn't remember anything because you didn't know whatever. Remember. You never did any religious studies at school, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, no, the point was that we did do it, but I haven't retained any of it.
Right. I feel like this is a great movie that you would get put on in, like, a religious studies lesson where you had a substitute teacher.
That would be great if that's what they put on in a religious studies classroom, but unfortunately you watch utter crap. And most things that are, like, Bible stories for children are awful. Like, it's Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, which just should be banned.
So you say that. That was like, they did like a spin-off, like semi-sequel to this, which was Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. I think it's called like King of Dreams or something like that, but I've not seen that. But that might be one for the list.
It's the most offensive thing about that musical is how fully cemented all the songs are in my head.
See, but that one I vaguely know. Like,
I've never seen it.
You're talking about the stage production, right?
Yeah,
the stage
musical.
Right, yeah, I've never seen that. The thing that I didn't remember about this movie is that it is a musical.
Like, it's quite good.
Like, I didn't remember any of the songs other than I knew that there was like the Mariah Whitney number, which is actually called When You Believe, and I thought it was called Miracles. I knew about that, but mostly because I had in my head, like, I could remember the music video for that.
Right, yeah.
And from that music video, I could remember the chariot scene, which is, like, how the movie opens with the chariot race sort of thing. Well, after the initial baby in the basket sort of thing. And the chariot scene in itself is a bit weird.
Oh, I like that bit.
Oh, don't get me wrong, I like it, but I think, like, it doesn't really... Like, story-wise, it doesn't really do much other than, I guess, like, set up the fact that, like, Moses and Ramses have, like, a kind of semi-competitive relationship.
But they have a good relationship, and that's why I brought that up earlier about how there's not a clear, like, villain. I mean, there's a bad guy, sure.
Sure.
And there probably should be a bad guy, given that the story is about freeing the slaves. Like, the slave owner is a bad guy, we get it. But, like, they don't dislike each other.
No, that was, like, one of the things I wrote down several times. It's, like, how important, how well done their relationship is. Like, Moses and Ramses' relationship is, like, the whole core of this movie.
Well, that's why they have that chariot scene, because that's them in their innocence before they realise, like, what their family is doing. Yeah,
but there are a few like scenes after that that like kind of like I struggled with just to understand like what are they trying to show here, because there's a few times where like they talk about, because there's a scene as well when they're older and they're meeting up again and they talk about like swapping the heads of the gods, and Moses is kind of like, oh, do you remember when you did that, and Ramses is like, you did that really, and it's like, oh, they both did it, and but then Ramses says like, oh, but Moses always kind of like stuck up him and was good for getting him out of trouble. But then after the chariot race, there's that scene where Ramses and Moses are talking, and Moses is like sewing something, and I was like, what the fuck is he sewing? And then he goes to the punch bowl, fills it up with punch, and then chucks it over the priest, just like apropos of nothing. And I was just like, is Moses a dick? Why has he done that? And then he just like gives the rest of the bowl to Ramses. It's like, go on then, you do it now. And I was like, is Moses a bad influence? Like, but I was just like, because it's, but that's what I just find like a little bit weird about it. Is like, Moses is doing these things and faces no consequences.
Right,
the consequences are always dealt to Ramses.
Yeah.
But even though Moses, like, with the chariot race, and, like, they destroy all, like, the thing and stuff. They cause, like, a, you know, what did I say? It's like a sand avalanche.
Yeah.
Like, what do you call that?
A savalanche.
Oh, yeah, sure. So they cause this avalanche, and then like Moses is like, it's all my fault, and then Pharaoh's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Ramses, you're screwed, you're in big trouble about this,
right? But
it feels like Moses has got like absolute like little brother energy. Like he is totally like can get away with anything
for sure. And then he's like, can we not have slaves, please? And Ramses is like, no, I want to keep them.
No, but that comes later. That comes later. That comes way later. Like, the initial, like, 20 minutes of the movie is just, like, them setting up their relationship, setting up a few things, and then it gets to that initial... correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, is not the inciting incident when Moses, like, finds out or meets his brother and sister.
That's not his brother and sister. It's his sister and his brother-in-law, isn't it?
No, it's his brother and sister.
Jeff Goldblum is his brother-in-law.
I thought it was his brother. But he has a brother and sister, doesn't he?
I thought that, well, I can't remember. I don't think it
matters. I'm pretty sure I remember, because I remember writing down, why does she not, yeah, I wrote down, why does she float Moses and not care about the other two kids?
Because he's the firstborn son.
Well, then where was the daughter?
What other daughter? Oh, good point.
There are two kids. There are two kids. I assume the Jeff Goldblum character is Moses' brother.
I assumed that it was Miriam's husband.
We can check that.
We'll never... No, we're not allowed to check it. We have to go purely on instinct.
Well, okay, you're wrong then. Because I guess it makes sense then, because like, the whole thing was like Pharaoh's meant to be killing the firstborns, right?
Right.
So...
No, the firstborn's son.
Yeah. But Moses' mother has already got a firstborn son and a daughter.
Why do you think that Jeff Goldblum's character is older than Moses?
Because at the start of the movie, when they go down to the river, Moses' mum is there with two children, and one of which is a boy.
Oh, I remember them being two girls.
Well, then where was the other girl?
Well, I don't know that either. But...
Well, this is a rabbit hole that leads nowhere. Because I assumed, like, that's why it made sense in my head, was that...
It's definitely a large plot hole if she's like, just in case they decide to go after my second born son, I'm going to put him in there.
Well, room. No, but I thought that was the whole point, was that, like, oh, yeah, no, maybe this doesn't make any sense then.
Maybe I'm right, Paul. Imagine.
Well, maybe it wasn't, because they do say that. He says that later on, doesn't he? Right, towards the end of the movie, Moses calls out Ramses as saying, like, your father killed the firstborn sons, but...
I don't even think they use that phrase in it.
That's, well, that's the thing. I don't know. Did he actually do that, or was he just killing off kids? He was just doing a bit of baby murder.
I mean, I was going to say he wasn't just indiscriminately killing children. He absolutely was just indiscriminately killing children. But there was a set of criteria, which was that it was the firstborn son. Like, that... But then that's something that I think I knew, or I have buried in my brain. I don't think that came from the movie, is what I'm saying. I think I knew that already.
Sure. So you have this moment in the movie anyway where, like, Moses finds out that he is not Egyptian, that he is Hebrew, and then he starts to question everything. And you have this really kind of weird sequence where, like, the hieroglyphics kind of come to life.
That was cool. I like that.
And I think that is really cool because it's all silent, pretty much, isn't it? It's, yeah. Like, you don't hear anything, but that's a really kind of cool... way to do that, and the movie keeps, like, I think it paced really well, like it just keeps moving forward, and because once you kind of has all this realization, it's kind of like nighttime, whatever, and then like the next day, like you were saying earlier, he ends up like killing a dude, and like that's all a bit like, and like you say, that is like something you wouldn't probably get in a Disney movie, where,
or
like,
the entire sequence where they show babies falling into the sea,
well, like, and granted, getting eaten by crocodiles.
Sorry?
I'm getting eaten by crocodiles.
I mean, even referencing that happening wouldn't happen in a Disney film. They had children falling into the sea.
Yeah.
They literally, I saw...
It's not the sea, it's the Nile.
Right, sure, whatever. I said when we were watching it, in order to avoid throwing her son into the Nile, she threw her son into the Nile.
Yeah.
In a basket. In a basket.
Yeah, that basket has great plot armor.
And I feel, well, he has great plot armor. This is why I think it's a kind of a weird choice to choose as your first film, because I feel like
it being the Bible, a Bible story, mm-hmm. there's a lot of like extra detail that they didn't show. Like, there's bound to be like stuff I don't even know that I
didn't. Oh yeah, but like you get the broad strokes, like like because
so you don't. Can't, yeah, okay.
But like I mean, like okay, so cut forward a bit. Like then you've got like Moses comes back trying to rescue the Hebrews, the slaves, and does all the plagues. Which, incidentally, God calls wonders earlier on. He's like, oh, well, I'll show him my wonders. And you're like, oh yeah, your wonders. Plagues, mate. Absolute plagues. And and all the plagues are kind of done in the space of like one song.
Which is
like,
just as well, because you wouldn't want a whole movie about the plagues.
Yeah, exactly. Like the
or indeed a whole year about a plague. Plague is shit.
Yeah. But I think that they use songs quite a lot to show passage of time in this movie. I think that works quite well for it. Like, that's maybe why the music isn't so memorable, perhaps, because, like, in like a, I guess, like a classic Disney kind of movie, like, a song is used to, like, express, like, a character's emotion or something like that. Where it's kind of used less for that here. It's used more for, like, doing a bit of, like...
I mean, apart from, like... Moses' song about his emotions, his mum's song about his emotions when there's lots of emotions.
I'm not saying there's not emotions. I'm just saying like they use those songs to move like the plot forward as well.
Can I direct you to Be a Man, which is all about a montage about fighting.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Here's the difference, I think, between this film and a standard average Disney film. You can't sing along to any of these songs. You didn't finish the film and you were like, deliver us, da-da-da-da. It was not.
Yeah.
Although I had the Miracle song was stuck in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
But really just that one line.
Yeah, but the Miracle song, like, well, When You Believe, is played like twice in that. So I think that's justifiable, well, I guess.
And the credits. And we then watched the music video, so sheer exposure alone was bound to make it get stuck in my head.
Yeah.
The point is, it's not all like catchy.
No, they're not fun songs, are they? They're not like just celebratory.
Wouldn't say they're not fun. I like that first one.
Which one's the first one?
The Deliverer's one. It made me want to sort
of. That's not a fun song.
Oh, yeah, no, I wanted to dance.
All right, it's more like an establishing sort of song, isn't it?
Yeah, but it can be fun and establishing.
Yeah,
movies can be two things. It can teach you about the teachings of the Lord and also make you think critically about your relationship to your father and whether or not he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And maybe you shouldn't own slaves.
To be clear, the reason that I chose this movie first was mostly because I saw it on Amazon the other day when we were looking for Planet of the Apes. And I thought that would be a good one to start with.
And I thought it was just your way of telling me that you wanted to... We'll do some Bible study together.
Oh, that's definitely not correct. No.
Okay. Maybe we could change the direction of this podcast and just purely focus on like modern entertainment adaptations of the Bible, the Holy Bible.
No, I do not want to go down that road.
Because I want to watch Jesus Christ Superstar again.
Well, you can watch that on your own time.
I don't want to watch it on my own because that would feel weird.
No, I'm not backing you for that. So there was a couple of things that did bug me about this movie. One of which was the female characters in this movie are very much like pushed to the background. And while like I get that they're not the focus of this movie, like the focus is on Moses and Ramses and their relationship, which I do think is done really, really well. I think like the fact that I don't think you learn Moses' wife's name until after they're married bugged me slightly. Sure. And like she doesn't have much, like she doesn't do much in it. Neither does his sister really, other than saying, Moses, what are you doing for us or whatever.
I thought it was quite a weird choice to include, and I would be really interested to know more about it, why they had Moses' wife, whose name I do not know, come to brought to the palace as a slave,
mm-hmm.
as a trophy. And it's a very explicitly like a sex thing, and then they later have Moses approaching her, or what he thinks is her, behind a sort of gauzy curtain, and you think that she's naked and sat on the bed.
Oh, the silhouette. Yeah, yeah.
And then I found that really bizarre. I wasn't sure what was going to happen with that character at all. It didn't seem, I don't know, it was weird.
Yeah, it is weird, because then she escapes and you don't see her for a fair bit after that. You're kind of like...
And then we meet her again.
Yeah.
And I just... Yeah, weird.
Yeah,
I mean, was he in love with her? Is the implication supposed to be that he was drawn to her family because... Like, what part did her being a slave in the palace have on his...
Right, yeah. I feel like it wasn't...
Or is it just a major coincidence?
I think it's more just to establish for us as the audience that they're already aware of each other. Because then when she meets him in the desert, she drops him down the well, right? Because she's like, oh, it's you.
Yeah, she forgives him very quickly.
Yeah, but again, there's a song and a big passage of time, his beard grows.
But, like, I thought, and granted this is because I don't know the story at all, I thought that there was going to be an elongated period of him having to explain to her, and therefore the audience, that he'd discovered that his role in society had been atrocious and the things he partook in were atrocious. Because, and that leads me on to something else that I was thinking about, which is that because there's such a lot of story, they can't go into everything in that much detail. But it is just a touch problematic that the reason that the film presents that he discovers slavery is wrong is because he was a slave, as opposed to discovering that slavery is wrong because it's abhorrent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those two things happen at the same time. And he's just as horrified by the fact that he is a slave, or he was a slave, that slavery exists.
But yeah, it's the fact that he would be a slave, right? Like, he should be a slave. Yeah,
were it not for, like...
Circumstance, yeah. And fate, yeah. Like,
I'm not necessarily saying that I think the film should have done that differently. I just think it's a really... I don't know, it's worth thinking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess because he does, like... I think that's the whole... Like, the whole... When he runs away and stuff like that is kind of born out of that, like, him struggling with that and him realising that. And it... Because we'd obviously watched Planet of the Apes recently, The Wolf of Planet of the Apes. It reminded me of that scene where the ape is being whipped and Caesar says, leave him. And that's kind of what happens here, where... There's a slave being whipped and Moses steps in and, like, gets into a scuffle and pushes the guy that's whipping him off the scaffolding sort of thing. It's a similar sort of moment of, like, stepping in, stopping it, whereas, like, for Caesar that has, like, a whole other different sort of set of consequences. For him, because of his position, he just kind of... Ramses goes, don't worry about it. Didn't happen. It literally didn't happen. I'd say what happens, it didn't happen. And he can't... He doesn't want that truth, right? He doesn't want to deny the fact that he killed someone. He feels like he should have that should have consequences, and so the consequences for him at that point are like he runs away, right? He just doesn't know how to deal with it, so he just runs away, and then he goes and leads this other life for a bit, and he kind of like has a nice little life, and then a sheep goes down a little passage and. He finds like the burning olive.
Can I ask you a question that you might know, seeing as how you went to a religious school?
Sure.
Why does he take his sandals off when he's?
Because God asked him to.
Oh, did he? I'd missed that.
Yeah, he says, "Fella, take your shoes off."
Well, I didn't say it like that. Now,
he says, "Oi, lad, get them off." No, he says, "Like this is a holy place. Remove your sandals," which seems like a very like weird thing to point out. Of all the things he could be bothered about, it's like. Shoes off, please.
In my house.
Mind the carpet, yeah. In my house, we take our shoes off.
I knew there was something significant about it, but I think I missed that piece of dialogue, and I was like, what does that mean? I need to know.
Yeah. Well, because I very much heard that piece of dialogue, and then I was like, is he gonna? And then he explicitly does, and you see him put his sandals down.
There's a bit later on because that stuck in my head because I didn't know what was going on, and then you see Moses retelling what's happened to his wife, and he gestures at his feet. And I was like, what does this mean?
That's a good point, actually. Does he wear sandals for the rest of the movie?
I don't know.
Maybe that's a thing. Maybe that's where he, like, doesn't wear sandals.
Stuff about the feet comes up in the Bible a lot, doesn't it? Washing people's feet is very... I know this not because of my learnings, but because of Jesus Christ Superstar. And they have a whole song about Judas saying to Jesus,
wash my feet.
Well, he
wash
says,
my feet.
Judas says to Jesus,
why would you wash my feet, Jesus? Or is it Judas?
No, it's the other way around. Oh, okay. Judas is like, mate, can we not feed people instead of washing feet a lot? And Jesus makes a point in song about why we should definitely spend our money on oil to wash feet. And I just don't understand.
Don't look at me. You made it out like I'm some sort of like religious expert. I just went to school.
Talking to people who have like some religious like knowledge.
But I'm not one of them.
A lot of these things underpin our culture in very strong ways, and I don't really understand anything about it because my parents did not expose me to that and were quite anti-religion.
Yeah, but I surely, like, did you not even at like secondary school do like religious studies where you just learn about religions broadly?
Very broadly, and I don't really remember focusing on Christianity, I suppose, because the assumption being that the majority of the students were from white Christian families, which was not true, but like because you go into that in primary school. I obviously took the information in and then thrust it firmly out of my brain because I was too busy thinking about boys and things.
Well, so there's a couple of things about this movie that are worth pointing out as well, is that when this movie starts, it opens with a little, I don't know what you would call it.
A baby?
No. Before that, the movie opens with some text, which explains that this movie is trying to do something. It's trying to tell the story of Exodus from the book of whatever. God, you see how bad I am at this stuff. It's trying to tell the story of Exodus, and I remember like reading about the production as well, is that they consulted with like a rabbi, a priest, and the Muslim equivalent to actually like go through the movie and kind of get their approval on it. And at the end of the movie, it has three quotes as well from like the Quran and the Bible and
the Torah.
Yeah. So it is most definitely like a religious movie, right? Like it, and it's quite proud of the fact that it does that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that, as well, that they explicitly pointed out in the production of the movie was that they wanted to spend a lot of time on God's voice and making God sound like otherworldly and ethereal or something like that. But to me, it just sounded like a white dude.
Oh, yeah.
It just, like, the thing that I think does go nicely with it is, like, they quite have some, like, surges of music when he says things that kind of, like, reinforce it, but it's not, I don't think they really achieved anything too magical.
If we were to be blindfolded and listen to that voice and then draw what we thought the man speaking looked like, we would both draw Zeus. And he would have a big beard.
And a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
The cast is very good, but is very white.
They should have had Alanis Morissette as God. My favourite god in popular Dogma. Culture. Yeah.
I'm surprised you've seen that movie.
Why?
Because Dogma's like a Kevin Smith movie. It's like,
I don't know why I watched it.
Well, yeah.
It's one of these films I watched on my own.
Yeah.
When I was trying to educate myself about the world that I didn't...
That was your religious studies lesson. Yeah, no wonder you don't know fucking anything.
So. I thought Alanis Morissette was God.
Yeah, so I don't think they achieved quite what they wanted to with the God voice. However, one thing I did appreciate is that you don't really hear God's voice very much. Like, it is only really in that one scene where God speaks to Moses, like, as, like, the burning olive bush.
Oh, it's an olive bush? I did wonder what kind of...
Yeah, no, again, that's... If you'd paid any attention in school, that's what they tell you it is. But, like...
Is that what... No, never mind. Carry on.
Okay. But like, it's not the there's not like a constant communication. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like very easily they could have gone into like a whole like, God, what should I do? You must do this, Moses, sort of thing.
No, God doesn't do that. Even I know that. Jesus goes and asks God.
I think in the Bible, though, there is a bit more like...
Back and forth.
Back and forth.
Like, God!
I mean, I might be wrong.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
Even I know that.
Okay, fine.
Jesus goes to the Garden of Gethsemane, I want to say.
Yeah.
Before he knows he's going to be crucified. And he's like, please, no, I don't want to be crucified. And God's like, he just doesn't say anything. Because God is not always there, Paul.
Oh, okay.
This is why we shouldn't be talking about this film, because I'm so woefully ignorant about everything to do.
But we're not here to debate like the religious merits of this movie. We're just
to talk about it in context. Even to talk about what you think that the filmmakers intended, because I have no idea what I think the filmmakers might have intended, because I don't have any frame of reference for their viewpoint.
Well, I mean, we do know what they intended, because they open with like all this text about like this blurb about like this is meant to be this movie. Yeah, we did it, and
which is how I would open a movie. I did it. Yeah.
It's not. Yeah, but they're not saying like this is open to interpretation. They're saying like this is the story from the Bible. Go enjoy. Thanks. See you. Love you. Bye. And I do think that like in terms of like what they set out to achieve there, they did that really well. I think. Like, the portrayal of Moses and Ramses is done really well as well.
The portrayal of God.
Portrayal of God, a bit more dubious.
I felt like they didn't flesh his character out enough.
Yeah, God needed more of a backstory.
Why a bush? Why anything? Why make the river run red?
It's blood, isn't it? It turns into blood.
Yeah, I know.
Well, these are all, like, the plagues, aren't they, to get... Ramses to set the people free. I think have actually one thing that again is done. I mean, there's a lot of child murder in this movie. Let's not gloss over that.
The film certainly doesn't.
No, exactly. But I think the particular like the final sort of plague of where you know the spirit, if you will, comes down and circles around and kills all the firstborn of the Egyptians.
Maybe that's when they've killed the firstborn.
That definitely does happen. Well, the final. Plague with the spirit that kind of comes down from heaven to kill all the firstborn. I think that is really well done and is both like creepy but still like holds up and isn't like explicitly like an angel or something like that. It is like this kind of spirity kind of thing, and it's like it's taking the souls of the kids. Like you see the one in the bed, and it kind of like
I find like, that particularly horrible.
Yeah, and there's like another kid that like you see like the silhouette of them like walking in with a pot, and then like they flop down, and you see like their hand roll out sort of thing.
Yeah, spoilers, by the way.
Yeah, but most people have had a religious education, so they know this bit. But I do think it's done, despite there being a lot of child murder in this movie.
Yeah,
I think it's handled quite well. Like it's not disgusting. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not just like.
Oh no, it's not gory. That's for sure. But in some ways. With animation, you don't... You get the idea of children being murdered in their beds indiscriminately, and that in some ways is much more disturbing than watching like a drawing of a child actually get eaten by a crocodile. Like I think as a child watching that, I would have been profoundly disturbed. Mm. But then I was profoundly disturbed by like magic roundabouts and like I thought it was well done, but my criticism, I guess, if it even is one, would be like I would never show this to a kid. I think it's I would not a young child for sure.
Well, no, but like a young child wouldn't have the patience to sit through this movie, right? Because it's not like a movie for like a young child. Like this is a movie for like, you know, I don't know.
A religious teenager.
No, but it's like a movie for like a preteen that can understand the story, can follow it, and like understand like the gravity of this, because it is like a serious story, right? Like, and I think that's something we pointed out. Like, one thing just to wrap up that I did want to say about this movie from like a artistic point of view is one thing I think it does really well is give you a sense of scale, like the number of people that you see. The vastness of like when Moses parts the sea,
mm-hmm.
and it comes up and you've got them walking through it. And it feels like even them walking through it is like takes a while, and you see like this whale silhouetted that comes through.
I like the whale. That was my favorite part.
That is really cool. And I think like the movie does a great job of giving you a sense of scale of just like the number of people that you see on screen. Like a lot of the time, it does make you feel like this is like, it's not like a few people going on like a road trip. Like this is a people that are moving. Mm-hmm. I think it does that really well. Yeah, I do think this movie still holds up. I do think it is really good. I think this wouldn't have been a movie that Disney would make. Because, number one, I don't think Disney really go out their way to, number one, make, like, religious movies.
No, I don't think so.
And I don't think, like, they would... They do movies that are, like... Well, now, modern Disney do movies which are deal with heavier topics. But certainly Disney of, like, the 90s wouldn't have made this movie.
No, and because... That, I think, is what I was trying to say earlier about Disney, which is Disney has an inbuilt culture, but it does not nail its colours to the wall in the way that this film does. This is specifically a religious film about a biblical story.
Mm-hmm.
And Disney films assume that the audience has grown up with a certain culture and has a certain set of beliefs, rather than explicitly saying it. And mm-hmm. that's why people are dubious about Disney, because it assumes all this kind of stuff that we now question.
I don't know about that. I think that's a topic for another time.
Definitely.
If you don't like the title of this podcast, please email us at our imaginary email address and claim that you want to have it.
Which is mildperil @gmail.com. Mildperil is the subname to this venture, and it's from me.
Nally wants us to call it Mild Peril. We'll let you decide.